I am sick at heart about what's happened to French people.
This is the third attack in France in 18 months. This latest one on Bastille Day, a day where France was celebrating everything they hold dear.
There are not excuses for the kinds of violent activities that we see in response to anything.
Clearly, that what is happening is terrorist groups are seeing that they have opportunities inside France for both homegrown terrorism and importing terrorists.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. It is Friday, and it is July 15, 2016, 5:09. Welcome to another business day as well. We begin today from a place where we're really getting familiar being, and that's a place of sadness and tragedy. We feel for the people in France. This horrible terrorist attack that has happened there almost makes us talking like numbers, talking about numbers and finances today. It seems almost third, maybe secondary or third to what is really important. But we do want to mention what is happening in France. We'll continue to monitor that. Vic is in the newsroom. Again, the death toll is above 80, could go higher. The investigation is underway. World leaders reacting still with shock as they begin to investigate what has happened in France. The United States Embassy has issued all kinds of warnings. If you have family in France, or if you're planning travel to France, visit the State Department website immediately for some emergency information there about travel to France. Also, how you can find information if you have somebody who perhaps was in Nice when this attack happened. There's a hotline number there that you can find information. Certainly, travel information is very, very important. We'll break into the opening bell as we move along this morning, if event warrants, or monitoring all of the French media this morning. And as I said, Vic is in the newsroom, too. He'll join us if anything new happens. But let's go right to the WGN market desk. Here's your overnight intel from the markets around the world. Things seem to be a little positive today, despite the attack overseas in France. Dow futures this morning are a bit lower, off about 9 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures lower as well. Markets generally lower in Europe, but higher in Asia this morning. Yesterday, it was another record day for Wall Street. Find a rally in financial stock drove the Dow and S&P to new record high, spurring financial strong earnings from J.P. Morgan Chase among the highlights yesterday. Also, the Bank of England decided unexpectedly to keep interest rates steady. That sent British stocks down. Other European stocks shed some gains, but U.S. stocks rose. Christina Hooper of Alain's Global Investors has an idea of what's going on. You know, we were all very worried about Brexit and the aftermath, but she says
what we saw was a positive reaction because it really, at the end of the day, said that the Brexit decision wasn't really that bad for the economy. If it had been, the BOE would have been much quicker to act.
Well, it's still early, I think. Firm economic data also supported stocks yesterday. The number of Americans filing for jobless claims unexpectedly held steady last week. And rising energy costs pushed producer prices up in June to their biggest gain in a year. Strong fixed income trading boosted quarterly revenue at J.P. Morgan Chase. Profit slipped, but beat estimates. And that brings us to Paul Nolte, our portfolio manager, our own personal portfolio manager from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul is with us today. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you this morning.
Good to be with you as well. You know, I mentioned at the top the attacks in France, and it's one of those days where as somebody who is in the financial realm every day, you deal with people all around the world. We're all interconnected, I would imagine, even more so with the financial world.
It is. And what's interesting when we go through this, and unfortunately you and I have talked about this more than we both care to, but the reaction in the financial markets going back to 9/11, when we shut down the markets for a week, and a very negative reaction to that, unfortunately, the financial markets are getting very used to these events, and that's why you do not see the big trading down that you would have expected in the past. So, unfortunately, investors are yawning at yet another attack.
Well, and also there's, I think in Europe, it's other, a lot of people are probably on holiday still. I know in France, it's they get a few days off for the holiday for Bastille Day, which they were celebrating yesterday when this happened. And here in the United States, even, it seems with violence and terrorism, there, I hope we're not getting used to it and accustomed to it. And I always say to my colleagues in the newsroom after one of these attacks, how can it be worse tomorrow? And then it is, you know. So I don't know that I'm getting used to it, and I certainly hope nobody else is either. But
no, it's an unfortunate situation, and I think we're going to see much more of it in the future. It's just not anything I don't think that we're really going to be able to control well.
Well, just know that going through and going forward now with the opening bell this morning, that we have heavy hearts here. We're certainly thinking of France and this terrorist attack, but there is other business to discuss, business of the world, business of life. And, Paul, some good news and bad news this week from economic reports.
And what, we had some pretty good economic data. You mentioned the producer prices were up a little bit because of the energy, but if we take a look at it on a year-over-year basis, it's still not yet to where the Fed would like it to be. The Fed is very interested in inflation, and that's some of the concerns that we're seeing globally of very slow inflation. And the Federal Reserve, as well as central banks around the world, are trying their hardest to boost inflation by keeping interest rates very, very low, because they have no firepower against deflation. They do against inflation and would like to see a little bit more of it. So those were good numbers, but I don't think enough to where the Fed is going to say, yes, we need to hurry up and raise rates.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors waiting to see if the major stock indices will close the week with new highs after 2 days of record closes for the Dow and S&P. Stocks surging in the past few days as fears fade over Brexit and bank stocks post stronger than expected earnings. As earnings season continues, Citibank, U.S. Bancorp, and PNC Financial with reports this morning before the bell. Investors' hopes buoyed by J.P. Morgan Chase's street-beating report earlier this week. Oil prices rebounding, up over 2% to $45.68 a barrel. But for the month, prices down 5.5%. A victory for Microsoft and privacy advocates. A federal appeals court in New York ruling that the U.S. government can't force Microsoft and other tech companies from turning over customer emails stored on servers outside of the U.S. The Justice Department has asked for those files as part of a narcotics case involving emails stored on a server in Ireland, the judge ruling those servers beyond the reach of domestic search warrants. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 521, and welcome back to the opening bell for this Friday edition. We're on with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, when we opened the broadcast, we had an analyst from New York talking about Brexit. Oh, it wasn't that bad. Nothing's happening. Let me get your reaction to that, because I saw your face move when she said that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because if your view is colored by how the markets are doing, nothing has happened. Everything is fine. But we've barely finished the Star Spangled Banner on the game. And we haven't even got the starting pitching warmed up yet to see what this thing is going to look like. So there is a lot of negotiation. There's a lot of moving parts. And we have no idea yet what the overall ramifications are. We've never been through that. Very similar to where we are with interest rates. We've never seen interest rates negative before, and certainly for this long. And we're not sure what those ramifications are going to be over a long period of time.
Well, and we're seeing the starting lineup change in Great Britain. We saw the exit of Cameron, the new prime minister taking over. One of her first appointments was to appoint Boris Johnson to Foreign Secretary, which was basically Secretary of State, and that drew a reaction from Secretary of State here. Really, are you joking? Was the response when the person at State was asked about it, because he hadn't heard it yet. So it's one of those things where there's so many, you know, moving parts and so many unknowns that I think it's too soon to say it's over.
Yeah, we're now in the political posturing part of it. We haven't got anybody to the table, and we haven't gone through all the details and what has to happen. So, yeah, we're very, very early in this game.
The Federal Reserve has started sending people out to talk about interest rates again. I know last week, after the really strong jobs number, you said maybe we could have that back on the table again this year. Are you thinking differently now?
Our position has been that interest rates won't be going up at all this year. There's really no good reason for that. But the Fed will feel compelled because they have been leaning against very low interest rates for a long time, and they've been looking for windows to increase rates. But each time they have a meeting, there's an excuse not to raise rates. Markets are too volatile. The Brexit vote's coming up. The economic data may not be strong enough for that particular release dates in, just in advance of their meetings. So because we're so data dependent, and the Fed has told us they are very data dependent, we tend to read a lot into second or tertiary economic pieces of information. So I'm not so sure that even though the employment report was relatively strong on the surface, wage growth was minimal. We're still at 2.5% wage growth. And we're not seeing those inflationary pressures that we would expect to see with very good employment where people are demanding salary increases, et cetera. It's not, the labor market is not as tight as you would think it is with employment where it is.
We talk a lot about bonds here. I know you're big on bonds. I saw this story yesterday, thought of you. Corporate bond defaults have just hit the highest level, I think, since 2009, maybe. 100 companies have defaulted on debt, 50% more than for the same period in 2015, highest level since 2009. What does it mean when one of these companies defaults on bonds, and does that impact our portfolios?
What it means is they are not making the interest payment. We went through that with Puerto Rico just recently, and we're starting to see some of this is the fallout of very low energy prices going into last year, beginning part of this. And even though energy prices have come up, a lot of the cash flow has been impaired for a lot of these companies. So if you own the bonds of one of those companies, you're getting pennies on the dollar. So it impacts you directly. But in many cases, a lot of people do buy through mutual funds. And many of the mutual funds may have some of these bonds in their portfolio, but it's a very, very small piece of their overall portfolio. So that tends to mitigate any disaster, if you will, for the portfolio. So again, when you're doing this, obviously you want to do your research. Part of the reason why we lean a little bit more toward mutual funds for these types of bonds and then stick to the treasuries for other parts of the portfolio.
Yeah, the biggest sector was the energy sector, which has been hit by oil prices. It's probably an area that you avoid, right?
We expected that to be happening. And so, again, now that everybody's breathing a sigh of relief that energy prices are back to 50, again, the knock-on effect was in December and the early part of the year, as we got it below 30, a lot of those companies shut down a lot of their operations and were trying to hoard cash so that they did not wind up in default. But yes, with prices where they were going to get hit.
So as we move into the weekend, what do you like? Banking? With J.P. Morgan Chase did some pretty good, some good numbers or no?
Oh, they did. They had some very good numbers. We'll see Wells Fargo this morning, Bank of America as well. One of the interesting things, we're taking a look at some of the portfolios and doing a little bit of rejiggering, but it's been very dividend-centric. So anything with a dividend, people have been very interested in, and the poster child for that has been utilities. Those are very expensive on a historical basis, so we've kind of shied away from that. We're finding actually some good dividend stocks and dividend groups in technology and in healthcare, and both of those sectors have really gotten beat up so far this year. So some of those companies are a little bit more on sale than they have been earlier this year, and certainly relative to other companies that pay dividends, have good revenue flow and good cash flow.
Is rejiggering, is that a financial term that I've
That's not... a technical term. I'm sorry. I should define that next.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management. Always good to have you here. Have a great weekend, and see you next week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You can find Paul's notes, by the way, Nolte's notes. You can sign up for them at Kingsview. It's kingsview.com, right? I always
get yes.
It. Not Kingsview. Kingsview in Chicago, and Paul Nolte. Have a great weekend.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:38. Welcome back to the program. Earlier this year, the Department of Transportation gave the go-ahead to resume passenger flights from the U.S. to Cuba. And this week, they proposed to award 8 airline services to Havana: American, Delta, United, Southwest, Spirit, Alaska, Frontier, and JetBlue. They named the airports, too, where you can catch a flight to Havana. And Chicago is not on the list. Let's bring in Rick Cini of FairCompare.com. He's the CEO. You can find him at Rick Cini and at FairCompare. Rick, it's surprising that O'Hare isn't on this list.
Yeah, well, they do have some places where they're actually originating, but not to Havana in the mix right now. There was two notable things that I expected. I expected Chicago and the Washington, D.C. area to actually have some flights into Havana, but that's not the case. Now, there are some flights on Frontier Airlines out of Chicago into some of the other cities like Santiago and Matanzas, but just not into Havana, which is a little bit unusual. I expected a little bit further northern cities to get some of those flights, but we haven't seen that quite yet.
And you would expect a hub like Chicago to be able to do that. Do you think it's something that might be coming?
It's not necessarily unusual for the Caribbean. Usually all the hubbing in the Caribbean is in the southeast. You have Charlotte being sort of the furthest south. You also have a bunch of different departure points in Miami, Fort Lauderdale. Apparently Tampa also is going to be used to do that. But you do usually see some nonstops out of New York because it's a snowburn haven, and you do see them out of Chicago, which is a little bit unusual. I think what they're basically saying is initially we're just going to see if we can get all this traffic in and out of South Florida and a few other specific places, and then we'll catch Washington, D.C., New York, and Chicago later.
The flights that do go to Havana are from the places that are being allowed to do that. Are they decent fares, or are they people finding good deals?
Yeah, initially, well, if you look at the actual fares from the nonstops, they were under $200 round trip, which is a pretty good deal. Now, remember, this is basically a touch-and-go flight. You're only really in the air about 25 minutes if you're flying from South Florida into Cuba. So, you know, it's a really short flight, and it would be similar to a shuttle flight like New York-Boston or Dallas-Houston or San Francisco-LA, for example, from a flying time perspective. So if you sort of compare those prices, that was good. After the initial week that they came out, and these weren't for Havana originally, the prices did jump over $120 each, so from the sort of the high 100s into the low 300s. So clearly demand soaked up very quickly some of those flights, and the price raised pretty quickly. Now, I will note, Steve, that the infrastructure there is not great right now. ATMs don't work, credit cards don't work, internet doesn't work, cell service is spotty. So if you're thinking about taking your 10-year-old and expecting them to be able to get on Snapchat and Pokemon, it's going to be tough sledding for the next 6 months to a year.
That was going to be my next question, is people really need to do their homework before they go, because they're not going to be landing at, let's say, Montego Bay or, you know, some other island destination where they're used to having all those amenities.
That's correct. Yeah, it's going to take a little while. I know there's a lot of pent-up demand. I have demand there. I haven't been there yet, and I definitely want to go soon. But I think I'm going to wait out this first wave, and let's see what it looks like later next year. And as far as a trip's concerned, cruise ports also aren't ready yet. Now, there are a lot of Europeans, especially out of Germany, that fly into Cuba, so there is some infrastructure there. It's not completely devoid of infrastructure, but it's just nothing compared to the demand the pent-up demand that's here in the U.S. after almost 5 decades now of pent-up demand.
Yeah, Boeing has been in the news a lot over the last week or so, especially in the last 24 hours. Yesterday, the Boeing CEO telling us that he is a little upset with Congress, that Boeing is actually losing money because they are trying to block this deal to sell jet aircraft to Iran. And he says it's not fair. Are you following this? Is this going to be a big deal for Boeing?
Yeah, well, you know, there's interesting. This comes on the heels of an announcement by both Boeing and Airbus that they expect the entire, over the next 20 years, the number of aircraft to double worldwide, trillions of dollars in revenue. So they actually changed their forecast. And when they changed their forecast, they actually upped it by several percentage points. So this is one of those deals where it's a piece of that forecast. And following this, you know, as far as, you know, giving people commercial airlines and trying to block things like that. Look, you know, this is a free trade society. Boeing should be upset about it, especially if Airbus is going to be the one that they're competing with and gets the deal de facto. So yeah. I think, again, the U.S. Congress and the State Department, a variety of other ones, need to sort this out because, you know, we need to compete as U.S. citizens and U.S. companies. We need to be able to compete for those particular contracts. Yeah. It's a huge contract, a $3 billion deal.
Yeah, and I think for Boeing, this the deal for its aircraft is about $18 billion. So it's a big deal for Boeing. At least that's what the CEO says. He's worried. You know, all of the air companies are at the Farnborough Air Show in London, showing off their stuff, trying to sell. And apparently the market is pretty weak for aircraft.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is that it's not good for the buyer as well, because they need both those airlines to compete in order to compete with each other and get the price down. If Boeing is prevented getting into the contract, it's actually bad for the buyer as well. So the seller and the buyer, it's both bad for. We've seen these things happen over the last 5 to 8 years, where we had different countries and issues with who can sell what. We've had China in the mix with some of these issues as well. China trying to get into the huge aircraft market space over the next 5 years, so we'll see that come in as well. Look, this is important business. This is a Fortune 50 company, and this is something we need to be aware of.
Get us out of town this weekend. Any good deals?
Yeah, so look, I was looking at a couple different things, right? We've seen what happened with Brexit in London. Prices out of Chicago to London, once you sort of get into mid to late August, under $900 round trip. There's actually a few I see in the low 800s. So that's certainly a place you can go. You can get out of town there. If you want to get out of town in sort of mid-August right now, you've got Seattle up in the northwest at 215. You've got LA, San Diego, San Francisco on the west coast at low 200s. You also have South Florida, including Miami and Orlando, under $200 round trip. And then the East Coast also under $200. Basically, if you're paying over $200 round trip for a trip in mid to late August, you're paying too much out of Chicago.
Sounds good. Happy travels.
Rick, hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Seeney, the chairman and CEO of FairCompare.com, with us from Dallas this morning, at FairCompare on Twitter, at Rick Seeney. A couple of other aviation notes today from Chicago. Mayor Emanuel plans to announce today that major airlines have agreed to build up to 9 new gates at O'Hare and continue to negotiate on more expansive plans that could yield more spots for passengers to get on and off planes. The mayor is scheduled to make an announcement on that later today. Tribune is reporting that story this morning. Delta Airlines has a second quarter profit beating expectations. Despite lower revenue, the company plans to limit its growth in a bid to push fares higher. Lower fuel prices are helping airlines earn big profits. Delta said that its net income from April to June was $1.55 billion. Up 4% from a year ago.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:51 on the WGN market desks this morning. Dow futures are a week off about 8 points. The S&P NASDAQ futures are off as well. It is Friday, so we get to have a little more extended talk with Orion Samuelson this morning about commodities. So good morning, Orion. I saw this GMO bill's headed to the president's desk.
It is, yes, and it's taken way too long to get it there. At least the president says he will sign it, because this started a couple of years ago when the House wrote its labeling bill, a national labeling act, and passed it, sent it to the Senate, and back in April we thought we had an agreement, a bipartisan agreement in the Senate. That fell apart, and there was some immediacy needed, because on July 1st, Vermont put in place its statewide labeling act, which is one of the things we were trying to avoid. And we sort of thought that after the agreement between the chairman and ranking Democrat on the Senate Ag Committee that we couldn't get it back together. Well, they did. And yesterday, lawmakers in the House voted 306 to 117 for the bill. It will display GMO contents with words, pictures, or a barcode that can be scanned with smartphones. And the Department of Agriculture will decide which ingredients would be considered genetically modified. But there are the critics. There are some consumer critics saying not transparent enough, and some Democrats in Congress saying the labeling system fails to provide clear, transparent information tailored for industry, they say, instead of consumers. But so far, after 150 scientific studies on the planet, there has been no danger found from genetically modified foods of any kind. And I subscribe to Secretary Tom Vilsack's theory, who said the only reason really to label is if there is danger, and there is no danger here. But at least we'll now have a national act, and that means we'll not have each state determining its own rules on labeling. So
yes, that's good news.
I hope the president signs it quickly.
It was a good day on Wall Street yesterday for most markets. How about commodities?
Well, we're into the weather season, where weather can change very quickly, and we've seen a pretty good little rally in the soybean market and in the corn market. It started out yesterday with a pretty good rally, and then during the day, it really turned around. New crop November beans ending the day down 42¼ cents after trading higher, and the December corn down 6¾ cents after trading higher, because the weather forecast said it's not going to be quite as hot and quite as dry next week as they were originally thinking and trading. And so it was a tough day in the grain market yesterday. On the livestock side, we did get a little bounce in cattle markets. I'm talking to you this morning from Arizona, and I've talked to a couple of cattle ranchers out here who are the people who produce feeder cattle that ultimately go into the feedlots to be fed out, become steaks and hamburgers for us. Mm-hmm. And they're hurting right now because they've got quite a few cattle that are in that stage. It means more beef is coming onto the market, and prices just aren't holding as well as they should.
I hate it when they're not happy, because I love burgers and steaks.
Oh, I do too. The other thing that I do want to mention, tomorrow morning on the Saturday morning show, Gary Pack will join us on the air. I think we're about a week away from Me Rise Sweet Corn. Mm. And, of course, that's the corn that we've talked about and enjoyed for several years here in the Midwest. And Gary will be with us on the air tomorrow morning to talk about that. And then Max Armstrong tomorrow will be out at Waterman, Illinois. They have, guess what, a tractor rally again. And where there are old tractors, you'll find Max Armstrong.
Right.
So we'll be talking about that tomorrow morning.
Sounds good. Ori and Sam, I'm just going to have a great day, okay? Have a good weekend. Bye.